Rogan Joe with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. All right. Well, the Jeff Sessions testimony happened today. And, well, I would say okay, this, my initial take on this is that Attorney General Sessions was very, very strong in his own defense, I thought. And he
He emerged defiant at the beginning with his opening statement. Almost defensive, but defending his honor.
Right. And saying that he found all of this to be any allegation that he had colluded with the Russians was, quote, a detestable lie. He pushed back very hard on Comey's testimony. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting points here that everybody wanted to know. Now, Comey last week had said that there was some other reason that he knew that the attorney general was going to have to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. And they'll discuss that in closed session. He didn't want to say that in public.
Right. He said a problematic reason that Sessions could not oversee the be any part of the Russia investigation.
At that point, they went into closed session. And then about 20 minutes after the closed session, there was a leak that Comey had said because there might have been a third undisclosed interaction that the attorney general had with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador to the United States.
Right.
Now, this goes back to an event in April at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington. This is an event that has been widely covered because the president, then the Republican, presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump, was having his first foreign policy speech. And he held it at the Mayflower. And there was, at the last minute, Ambassador Kislyak was brought into the ballroom there and seated in the front row. And there were some other people around him, including Jared Kushner and some others, and other people from the Trump campaign at that point, that seated him there. And then afterwards, I guess the question had been, did Jeff Sessions have any at any time have a meeting with Kislyak while he was? And again, this would Jeff Sessions been a senator. This was in April of 2016 during the campaign. So this would have been prior to being attorney general and all the rest of that.
Right.
And prior to the win.
But he was still a surrogate of the campaign.
Correct. And a very, very vocal surrogate of the campaign.
Absolutely.
And,
loyal.
You know, one of the most one of the earliest adopters of. He was an adopter of Donald Trump before any senator, Republican senator, was required to become one, right? So it was he was an early guy. So the question was, did he have any kind of meetings with Kislyak about anything specific or germane? Did he have a private room there? Did he and his staff have a conference room there that was asked of Attorney General Sessions, then Senator Sessions?
Or
and
any
he
private
said no.
Meetings whatsoever? He said no.
And he said he didn't recall, you know, the crowded elevators, you know, could I have met him in passing at some point? He said he just doesn't recall. If that is all true, I think that's an excellent defense against the Comey allegation, if that is such, or especially innuendo, as Comey did in an open session of the Senate last week.
Right.
Now, the real issue here, though, is was Jeff Sessions part of the firing of James Comey? And is the firing of James Comey an attempt by Donald Trump to slow up the investigation into Russia? There's really very simple questions on the floor here, right? Were they involved with Russia? Did they get involved with anything before the election? Were they guiding fire from the Russian hackers? That's the first question. Were they helping them understand what was going on here, either being duped into it or willingly doing it? And then after it was all said and done, did they promise the Russians anything for their help in the election? That's really the questions Americans have here. And so far, I don't think there are any clear answers.
I'm not sure either. The one part that relates directly to what you're talking about, I think it was Senator King who was asking him about the whole idea of this executive privilege, and he seemed to invoke it when it came to whether or not the president talked with him about the Russian investigation, but the Comey firing, that was the other part. So he was selectively invoking it. So he talked openly today about one of those things, but not the other.
There's another interesting moment here, too, as Comey last week had said that he had felt uncomfortable being asked to be alone with the president in the Oval Office. Remember that? And then Jeff Sessions was asked about that today, and he didn't seem to recall it. He recalled that he did linger. He recalled that he was, you know, he was one of the last people to leave the room. And he also did acknowledge that Comey had come to him and said he was uncomfortable with the communication by, and being alone with the president. But then Sessions wouldn't go into any more detail. A lot of the flavor of what happened here was Comey, I'm sorry, Jeff Sessions answering some questions and not others. And then when he wouldn't answer others,
that was it.
He was invoking this privilege. That the not executive privilege, because that's a constitutional issue, but this sort of protocol privilege of private communications between the executive branch and the Department of Justice.
But they're saying that he doesn't really have that ability. It was the point of several of the Democrats who were questioning him, that he doesn't have that. He either can answer the question, say it's classified, so you can't answer it in an open session, or say you're invoking the president has invoked the executive privilege. It's not, it's something you can't say, well I'm going to do what I feel appropriate, or I'm going to do what I think is, you know, what I want to do. He's under oath. They were saying is their point to tell the truth about what happened in that situation. And, you know, he made the point, or someone made the point, one of the senators made the point that, look, there are lots of conversations between presidents and attorneys general that should and do remain private and do not come out as an open testimony.
My sense is that this is going to go down as a successful session for Sessions. I didn't mean to say it like that. It just came out that way. I think that Jeff Sessions acquitted himself well there. And, you know, and I'm a critic of the president. So I think that you're going to see more Republicans. I think if I'm going to call balls and strikes here, I think he did well. And you're going to see more Republicans now feel emboldened to wrap themselves back around the president and his agenda, even if they're a little uncomfortable with his tactics. They will be, you know, they may think that some dampening of the heat here has happened. Having said that, there's still some mileage here to go, and I think that there are some other emergent national security issues. John McCain threw a doozy out there in the middle of all
that
this.
That was fascinating.
Saying that was Sessions aware of, basically making everybody aware around the world of the threat that Russia poses to the United States of America, in saying that there was a moment in which the Russian spies in the United States got out of the, went into the wind, as they like to say, on homeland, and got away from our own counterintelligence people watching them, and then were eventually picked up in places mapping the telecommunications electrical grid of the United States.
Which I had never seen reported before.
No.
So that seemed like a new reveal that maybe it should have come out, maybe it shouldn't have come out.
But this is clear that John McCain is trying to make a point here. Russia is dangerous. Mm-hmm. Must be taken seriously. So now becomes the question, will the president take Russia seriously? Because if he starts to do that, all the pressure comes off of him. The pressure doesn't come off of him by firing James Comey. The pressure comes off of him by treating Russia as a hostile actor. Mm-hmm. And then it changes everything. All right. All that coming your way. We are going to talk to Gordon Chang about North Korea, because an American student has been released from North Korea right after Dennis Rodman got to North Korea. Is it related? And that kid's been in a coma, according to the North Koreans, for a year and 3 months. We'll talk about all of that coming your way. That's the other breaking news. We're also awaiting a verdict in the Bill Cosby trial. And the president is about to speak in Wisconsin. We'll take you all around the world here. Don't anybody move. But first, Violetta Pitomedic with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
CLTV, now in HD. Watch the TV simulcast of Steve Cochran and Ro Khan, along with all the latest news, weather. You in HD. Better get your HD makeup ready. Traffic.
Oh, God.
It's all in high def. Now on Comcast Xfinity, channel 352. That's where you go for that.
All right. Judy Pilak is standing by with the WGN News. And then we're going to figure out what just happened in North Korea. Is Dennis Rodman? I had this crazy dream last night.
About Dennis Rodman?
I went to sleep in the year 1992. And Bill Cosby. Oh. And I had this dream that Bill Cosby's on trial for raping a woman.
Oh.
And then that Dennis Rodman is now in charge of our reaction to North Korea, and that Donald Trump is president of the United States. I had this crazy dream.
In 92, you'd never believe that.
Just imagine that. Dennis Rodman is freeing hostages.
Basketball diplomacy in action.
All right. We will We'll come back and discuss that with Gordon Chang. And then we'll have, of course, all the wrap-up of Jeff Sessions' testimony today. We're also expecting the president to take to the stage in Wisconsin and may have comments about what happened in the Jeff Sessions hearing today, and awaiting a Bill Cosby verdict. All of that, stay right here. All right, we're expecting some commentary from the president of the United States. He's in Waukesha County, Wisconsin right now. Mm-hmm. He and Ivanka are sitting down. They sat down at a technical college, and it was like a jobs kind of
right, STEM
event.
Careers for women, mm-hmm. Science, technology, engineering, and math. And, so, and apprenticeships, I think, was also one of the headlines that they're talking about, the need for apprenticeships.
Because I guess Wisconsin has had an apprenticeship law on the books for a long time. Over a century, I think. So this, it's a state that he's going to try to base this whole apprenticeship concept, model it after what they're doing in Wisconsin. So
that was modeled after the TV show.
Maybe a little. I think most Americans did. So we're waiting the president there. But in the meantime, Gordon Chang is joining us. And this, I shouldn't say in the meantime, because I think this is a startling story,
sure
Gordon.
Is.
Author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. He's also at the Daily Beast and contributor to Forbes.com. And you can see him on cable news almost 23 out of the 24 hours a day. I don't know how you ever sleep. All right. Let's talk about these two things happening simultaneously. We do not know if they are connected, right? But you've got Dennis Rodman, former Chicago Bull, landing in Pyongyang, meeting with North Korean officials, and then the release of an American student who is being held in prison, actually in a hospital, apparently, by North Korea for trying to take a propaganda sign from his hotel and then placing it back down. Mm-hmm. And then he was accused of, crimes against the state.
He said he wanted it for a U.S. church that he had taken it.
All right. What do we make of this, Gordon?
Well, I think that essentially what's happening is that the North Korean regime wants to establish some back-channel relationships with President Trump. And so they believe that releasing Otto Wimbeer, who has basically been in a coma since March of 2016, would be considered to be a goodwill gesture. Now, of course, keeping him in a coma for more than a year shows how horrific the regime is. But nonetheless, I think that that's what they're trying to do. With Dennis Rodman, who is basically the only person in the world to know both Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, I think they probably think that Rodman would be able to open a door, as Rodman said, when he was in the Beijing airport.
So this, even though the White House said he's traveling as a private citizen, yesterday when it was announced that when there was a video of him landing in Beijing before he was flying to North Korea, they said, hey, he's traveling as a private citizen. That's all we can say about that. And then now he lands, as you point out, in Pyongyang and says, I am trying to open a door. And it does seem that there is a tacit admission on behalf of the White House that, yeah, he might be there for us.
Yes, and also Rodman, in response to a question from a reporter, said that President Trump was going to be happy with what he's doing in Pyongyang. Now, maybe Rodman was just making it up. You know, it is Dennis Rodman, after all. But nonetheless, I think that because of the relationship that Rodman has with the president, that there's a possibility that the two of them actually did talk about this. And we know that President Trump has tried to establish a talking channel with the North Koreans. So it doesn't take very much of a stretch of imagination to think that Rodman at least is on an unofficial mission for President Trump. And indeed, Rodman called his trip a mission, quote unquote, indicating that he actually was trying to do something on behalf of the country.
I want to read this statement from the Secretary of State. At the direction of the president, the Department of State has secured the release of Otto Wimbeer from North Korea. Mr. Wimbeer is en route to the United States. He'll be reunited with his family. The Department of State continues to have discussions with DPRK, that's North Korea, regarding three other U.S. citizens reported detained. Out of respect for the privacy of Mr. Wimbeer and his family, we have no further comment at this time.
Yes, that's typical State Department talk.
So that's normal behavior right there. But I did notice at the direction of the president, as the dependent clause that started the whole thing out. It wasn't like the United States has secured. It's at the direction of the president. They're giving the president specific credit for this, which leaves us with the impression that there was some sort of communication there, top communication. Maybe not between the president and Kim Jong-un, but there was direction by the White House here.
Well, the White House, I mean, over the course of, let's say, the last 5 weeks, has been trying to talk to the North Koreans. And we saw that with the president's comment saying that Kim Jong-un was a smart cookie and that he would be honored, quote-unquote, to meet him. And that's a real indication that Trump actually did want to talk to the North Koreans. So you start to see all of these things come together. And so you start to think, well, maybe Rodman, who is the president's friend, was indeed working on Trump's behalf. But in any event, you know, we've seen China, South Korea, North Korea, and the United States have in various ways signaled they want to talk with each other. And maybe Rodman is the catalyst that actually makes that happen.
Wow.
Do you think that the release of the student is tied to Rodman? Because that was the other question, the coincidence of these things happening coinciding.
Yeah, there are no coincidences when it comes to North Korea. And, you know, within the space of an hour, one American left North Korea and the other came.
Yeah.
So I sort of see this as heightened diplomacy on the part of the North Koreans. It may not be effective diplomacy, especially because Wambir was kept in a coma. But nonetheless, this is, you know, diplomacy North Korean style.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I want to ask you this, though, that Kim Jong-un made a not-so-veiled threat against the city of New York yesterday in saying that his missiles are capable. You know, New York's not so far away from my missiles, sort of going after the president who'd been trolling him on Twitter.
Yeah, Kim Jong-un can't hit New York with a missile unless he puts it on a merchant ship and sails it close to New York Harbor. But now I think he probably has 3, maybe 4 missiles that can hit the lower 48 states. They haven't been tested at full range or haven't been tested at all, but they are based on proven technologies. And in the absence of American cyber sabotage, they probably work. Kim Jong-un has made accelerated progress on missiles, firing off 16 ballistic missiles so far this year in 10 separate tests. And that's a real indication that the North Koreans are absolutely serious about being able to mount a nuke on top of a missile and hit the American homeland. They're not there yet, but, you know, in the space of 2 or 3 years, they'll be able to do that.
Is it a surprise, though, that he would say both, Kim Jong-un would act so erratically to say both, that he's releasing an American, you know, we would consider hostage, he considers a prisoner, and at the same time says that, you know, he's not afraid to blow up New York? I mean, it's...
Well, that's negotiating North Korean style, giving the United States an incentive to do something. You know, we Americans, when we think about negotiations, we try to sort of be cooperative, give concessions beforehand, try to set the stage. That's not the way the Chinese or the North Koreans think. They think that they'll club you first, and then you'll be willing to talk. And I actually think that, you know, over the course of decades, we need to recognize that we have to impose costs on both China and North Korea if we want negotiations to be fruitful. We've just got it completely wrong. We just sort of assume the Chinese and the North Koreans think like us, and that's our fault. We should know by now that they think in a very different way than we do.
Seems like we have the right president for the right times.
Yeah.
Then,
if you want, maybe the right ambassador as well.
If you want to talk about sort of adopting their style of negotiation.
Talk about Gordon. The Kim Jong Un has had this affinity for, you know, basketball in general, the Bulls in general, and this is kind of where he forged this, you know, this friendship, unlikely friendship with Dennis Rodman from back in the day, following the Bulls. Wasn't he sort of obsessed with American basketball?
Well, he is. And when Madeleine Albright was Secretary of State, one of the last things she did was she brought a ball signed by Michael Jordan and gave it to Kim Jong-il, the father of the current leader. And so there is what you could say is basketball diplomacy. When Dennis Rodman, on his 4 previous trips to Pyongyang, was involved in the big basketball game and did other basketball-related things. And so this is sort of the way Rodman views it. Now, many people have criticized Rodman for what he's done, but nonetheless, this is the way he sees it. Basketball diplomacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
Gordon, as I said earlier, it's like I went to sleep in 1992 and had this crazy nightmare that Dennis Rodman was going to be running international diplomacy, Donald Trump would be president, and Bill Cosby would be on trial for his life. I don't know how this...
Who would have thunk it?
I know. 25 years, really. A lot can happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Gordon Chang, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, sir, as always.
Thank you.
All right. Violetta Pydermedic has the WGN traffic trouble spots. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN.
Here's a great text from the 847. Imagine waking up from a coma and finding out President Donald Trump and Dennis Rodman were involved in your release.
A year and a half long coma.
Think, yes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Freaked out by it.
They're what? Who? That is an excellent point. All right, we have got Judy Pilak standing by with the WGN News, and then a top 5 you will not believe. I'm going to tell you that right now. This is 2 minutes away. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN.
I got something for you, Ro.
Yeah, what?
It's kind of melted a little bit, but it'll still taste good. It's a cup of kindness. Drinks purchased at Starbucks today through June 19th will benefit the Lady Gaga Born This Way Foundation. 25 cents from every purchase. That one right there, hopefully you like it, is the Ombre Pink Drink. Instant summer favorite, by the way. It's got lemonade in it.
What?
I don't know, some tea in it.
It's
a light fruity for you, but it's supposed to be kindness about kindness. And there's not enough of that in the world. So let's
Bro, you can't enjoy that drink.
I can't enjoy kindness at a moment like this.
Cute.
Hold on. This is from Lady Gaga herself.
That's one of the four drinks that are participating. There is the violet drink we could get for Violetta.
Oh, I kind of like it.
Are these like the adult unicorn frappuccinos?
Yeah,
sort of, kind of.
It's too sweet, though.
Oh.
Sweeter than the unicorn frappuccino?
I don't know. I never tried that piece of art.
Delights.
Real gem.
And then there's the matcha lemonade also.
Oh, matcha. So, I don't understand matcha.
Oh, I love matcha.
You do?
Are you kidding? Yes.
I haven't tried it, but the Kardashians say it's good, so I will.
Matcha reminds me of... matcha doesn't taste... you know how some people have a taste reaction to like cilantro and things like that? When it comes to matcha, to me it tastes like butt. And I just can't get it out of my head.
Well, it's got a little bit of bitterness to it, but high in antioxidants.
Not that I've ever tasted that, but it just I would imagine it would be.
That's how you might imagine.
Yeah, that's how I might imagine it would be.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's good for you.
Yeah.
Throw it on in there.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. All right. Well, that's good.
Which one's good for you?
Yeah.
The matcha, not the butt.
No, the matcha, yeah, people swear by it. I just have a reaction. You know, people like have cilantro and it tastes like soap to them and it makes them sick.
Ooh, right.
I hate cilantro.
There's like 20% of the population can't eat cilantro because it all of a sudden it's got this like soapy kind of thing. Matcha has the same problem for me. It tastes like what soap should be trying to fix.
Even if you just put like a little powder in, like just mix it with something?
That's just what, I don't know, whatever
thing.
It is, just whatever, the whole idea of it.
Whole,
I, you know, the ice
thing.
Cream or whatever, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, spread some acts of kindness now that you've gotten your kindness right. Drink. Even if you don't drink it, you know.
What am I supposed to be so happy about? All right, here's what's happening.
Okay.
In the world. And we're going to get to your top 5 in just a moment here. But here's what is happening.
Okay.
The president, we're about to get a playback. This is very interesting. I noticed that the White House, the Trump White House, likes to do it this way, where they don't take things live. They play them back. I guess that's so they can decide whether they should or shouldn't.
Should we edit this?
Well, they don't edit them. They just either play it back or they don't.
Can't.
And there's going to be a playback of President and Ivanka in Waukesha County, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have some comments. We're told that. That's going to be coming our way in just a little bit. We're waiting for that. That may have already occurred. And then it just gives them time. I don't know. I don't understand. Maybe it's for, I'm sure, maybe there's legitimate reasons for it, but that's the way they do.
It's just sort of hanging out there. We don't know why we don't have it yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
And why they continually use this practice of playbacks as opposed to live commentary. But we will have that for you. Jeff Sessions did. We're going to have a lot of that coming up in the top five. Did actually speak today for 2.5 hours in the U.S. Senate. So
it got contentious at some points.
Lots of headlines out of that. But you know, overall, I think a good day for Jeff Sessions.
I think so.
And
an okay day
for the White House. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot. There's still some runway ahead here before this thing is all said and done. And then there is we're waiting on the Cosby jury. It is now 6. They are outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Eastern time zone. So it's now 6:13. We expect that either they're going to come back with a verdict or go home, you know, have dinner and go home. So or back to the hotel where they're being sequestered.
Mm-hmm.
And then so we've got that. And we also have awaiting it's like you got the president, you got the Bill Cosby, and you were also awaiting the return of this Ottawan beer to Cincinnati, who we expect maybe landing in Cincinnati before the end of the show.
Who's
today.
In a coma from botulism, they say, from being in North Korea.
So they put him in he got botulism when they put him in a coma?
That's what they're saying.
Or there's a botulism-induced coma.
No, Botox coma. They're not saying it was induced. They're saying it was just in the labor camp that he got botulism and that somehow led to a coma.
Wow. That does...
Doesn't speak highly
of
the labor camps.
Yeah, well, because they're not. You know how sometimes
some of them.
Four Seasons will buy a labor camp and make it into a 5-star hotel.
Not the case
this
here.
This is not
clearly.
The case. No,
but
no.
Very sad that that's.
Yeah, I don't know
that
what
has
to,
taken place.
I don't know what to make of any of that, but we'll see. I mean, you know, that sounds like something that'd be tough to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So if he comes back and perishes here, I mean, what does that do for diplomatic relations? We'll talk about. You know, we'll have to just see what happens there. Mm-hmm. All right, we are now prepared. We are ahead of ourselves here because in front of us...
It's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Now home of the Edge, kitchen and bath showroom.
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show. Let's go!
Checking in at...
Number 5.
Jeff Sessions today answering questions about the Senate from the Senate Intel Committee. He was asked about last week's testimony from former FBI director, fired FBI director James Comey, concerning the ongoing Russia investigation. Sessions during the opening said he did not communicate with the Russians about the 2016 election.
And the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie.
Okay.
Can see why he wanted the open hearing, wanted to publicly say exactly that, coming out of the gates, defending his honor, and very defiant. No connection, no collusion, nothing. This is all just sort of it's made up.
Well, you know, here's my take on this.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. Why? I get it. It's all made up. But why so much smoke? And it's not smoke that, like, Democrats came up with. Or even anti-Trump Republicans or the anti-Trump people came up with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of reasons that people, including Republicans, and conservative Republicans who want to know answers to things like, why did he not, on his disclosures, admit that he had met with the Russians? Including one meeting in his office at the United States Senate with his staff there. Why did he leave that out?
Today he said that, you know, he left out all kinds of, you know, meetings with that were just about general course of business sorts of
But when he was asked directly about that in his testimony, you know, at the confirmation to become attorney general,
right,
he seemed to forget it as well.
You mean the Al Franken questioning? Is that what you're talking
about? Yes.
It was that third meeting, the one in the Mayflower Hotel, that he did not recall.
And he now still says he does not recall it. Okay, so that leads us to...
Number 4.
So Jeff Sessions was repeatedly asked about his meeting with the Russian ambassador last year. And Senator John McCain asked whether Sessions met with any other Russian officials.
During the 2016 campaign season, do you have any contacts with any representative, including any American lobbyist or agent of any Russian company within or outside your capacity as a member of Congress or a member of the Armed Services Committee?
I don't believe so.
Politico recently reported that in the middle of the 2016 elections, the FBI found that Russian diplomats whose travel the State Department was supposed to track had gone missing. Some turned up wandering around the desert or driving around Kansas. Reportedly, intelligence sources conclude that after about a year of inattention, these movements indicate, one, that Moscow's espionage ground game has grown stronger and more brazen, and that quietly the Kremlin has been trying to map the United States telecommunications infrastructure. What do you know about this development and how the Justice Department and other relevant U.S. government agencies responding to it?
We need to do more, Senator McCain. I am worried about it. We also see that from other nations with these kind of technological skills like China and some of the other nations that are penetrating our business interests, our national security interest. As a member of the Armed Services Committee, I did support and advocate, and I think you supported, legislation that would, and it's ongoing now, that requires the Defense Department to identify weaknesses in our system and how we can fix them.
That is fascinating, because what has happened there is McCain is turning the cube a little bit here. He wants, in asking that question, it's my belief that Senator McCain is basically saying back to Jeff Sessions, you know, there's a lot of wackiness and misunderstanding and veil around the relationship between Donald Trump and Russia, right? You know, these people that may have had contacts and they refused to acknowledge the contacts. Now they don't want to talk about it. Trump brings up Russia as the reason that he's fires Comey, says that to NBC News. He tweets about it. It's all fake news. It's all this. It's all that. And what John McCain is saying is that Russia is an existential threat. And maybe the president had nothing to do with Russia. Maybe nobody in his campaign was guiding fire from the Russians concerning the leaking of emails or other kinds of things that hurt Hillary Clinton during the campaign. We know that that's what they were doing. We just don't know if there was collusion between the Trump campaign and that, or the president or his intimates in that. Fine. Let's just assume for a second the president nor anybody in his campaign or family or whatever had anything to do with the Russians. Let's just take that as a supposition.
Because there is no evidence at this point that people have seen or that any of the senators or members of Congress have seen.
Right. Fine.
To prove it.
That we've, at least it's been made public.
Point.
Right. So let's just assume that's all true. All right. Assuming that's all true, Russia is still an existential threat. And why is Donald Trump still so protective of his relationship? Why did he sit in the Oval Office with high-ranking Russian officials and say, hey, listen, I fired that Comey guy yesterday. The pressure's off.
Nut job.
Right. Why does he continue to want to curry favor with people who are mapping our telecommunications infrastructure? Because they have a cyber weapon that they used in Ukraine to blind Ukraine for their invasion. Listen to this.
The Washington Post reported yesterday Russia has developed a cyber weapon that can disrupt the United States power grids and telecommunications infrastructure. This weapon is similar to what Russia or Russian allied hackers used to disrupt Ukraine's electrical grid in 2015. Can you discuss a little bit in open session how serious that is?
I don't believe I can discuss the technological issues, just to say that it is very disturbing that the Russians continue to push hostile actions in their foreign policy.
All right. So all the president has to do here is just go along with that. Yes, the Russians are doing those things. We know they're up to no good. We are not going to allow that to happen in 2018 or 2020, even if it may have it been an incidental help to me, or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Whatever it happens to be, he doesn't want to admit failure. He doesn't want to admit anything that doesn't make him seem like he's totally in control and totally strong. But the reality is that the Russians did meddle, And so whether they meddled to his benefit or not, people can argue about that forever. He's president of the United States. Nobody disagrees with that. Mm-hmm. The issue now is, what are you going to do as president of the United States to protect us against that and protect yourself? Because they're going to come after you next, pal. And believe me, if Bernie Sanders runs for president, they're going to want him, because that's going to totally blow up the country. So it's like there isn't a there's no good in the president continuing to coddle Russia. And it just makes it mysterious as to why he would do that with all these other things going on.
Well, it feeds, that's what it boils down to. It feeds the narrative. But I mean, I think it's just so hard to separate the politics out of it. If you listen to what happened today, did you think that all the senators questioning, both on Republican side and Democrat side, were really honestly after just that? Is Russia colluding with or trying to influence our country or our elections and meddling in a serious way? It didn't seem like that. You know, I think it all becomes very political. And I think that the reason Jeff Sessions did so well was because he basically said, I had nothing to do with it. He went on the record to say no collusion. It'd be a total blatant lie to say that I had.
Right. And unless it's proven that he had it. In this meeting, the Mayflower meeting that was of such question.
But the Mayflower wasn't a private meeting, he said. It
right. Might have been unless there was a private
or a
meeting.
Or handshake or, yeah, right. Unless he's lying about that.
Right. Then, which we'll see, and I'm assuming that he isn't, because if they had known that at the moment, then they would have brought that up. All right.
So. Have a drink of your kindness.
I cannot have any more of the kindness drink from Lady Gaga. All right. We'll get to your 3-year tune you want, but first, Violetta Powdermatic, WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com. Check it out today.
Top 5-5 continues right here. It's an all Jeff Sessions top 5. It's fun to have a Jeff Sessions top 5.
Do you think you'd have that ever?
All right. Checking in. No, I never did, actually.
Mm-mm. Number 3.
All right, this is Senator Heinrich.
This got contentious.
And Jeff Sessions. He was asking the Attorney General about Russia's involvement in the 2016 election, if he'd be willing to discuss the matter in a closed session, if he won't discuss it in an open one.
You were part of the national security team, so if he would have heard something about Russia and with their capabilities and our concern about what they could do to our election process, was there ever any conversations concerning that whatsoever?
I don't recall it, Senator Manchin.
I know it's been asked of you, the things that, you know, your executive privileges and protecting the president.
Right, hold on one second.
I understand that. But also, when we had Mr. Comey here, you know, he couldn't answer a lot of things in an open session. He agreed to go into a closed session. Would you be able to go into a closed session? Would it change your answers to us or your ability to speak more frankly on some things we would want to know?
Senator France, Manchin, I'm not sure. The executive privilege is not waived by going in camera or in closed session. It may be that one of the concerns is that when you have a investigation ongoing, as the special counsel does, it's often very problematic to have persons not cooperating with that counsel in the conduct of the investigation, which may or may not be a factor in going into closed session.
It would be very helpful. I think the committee, there's a lot of questions they'd like to ask, and I know that you...
That's what got very awkward.
That's Joe Manchin, by the way. Hold on one second. We have a little confusion there. That's Joe Manchin asking mm-hmm. him the questions about executive privilege. Now, here is Senator Heinrich going on, this is actually prior to mm-hmm. Manchin, because Heinrich got so testy with him, Joe Manchin had to make it sound better. So
it
this
got
was
ugly.
This was the preamble to that.
Can you tell me, what are these longstanding DOJ rules that protect conversations made in the executive without invoking executive privilege?
Senator, I'm protecting the president's constitutional right by not giving it away before he has a chance to view it. And secondly, I am telling the truth in answering your question in saying it's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice.
Are those policies written?
And to make sure the president has full opportunity to decide these issues.
Can you share those policies with us? Are they written down at the Department of Justice?
I believe they are.
This is the appropriateness legal standard for not answering congressional inquiries.
It's the my judgment that it would be inappropriate for me to answer and reveal private conversations with the president when he has not had a full opportunity to review the questions and to make a decision on whether or not to approve such an answer.
Okay. Boy, that's a lawyer answer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about that is that they don't want he was making decisions. This is the only thing that I think mitigated against him today. He wasn't answering questions that were posed directly about communications he had with the president, and the president had not invoked executive privilege on mm-hmm. this. He was just deciding, well, it's just protocol. We just don't do it this way.
Right, which Senator Heinrich was trying to explain. That's not the bucket that says not what I feel is appropriate is not okay when you're under oath. You can either answer the question, say it's classified, and can't answer in open session, or else
all right. Hold on 1 second.
Privilege.
This is the playback of the president right now in Wisconsin. This will come in as number one, by the way.
We're here today in Waukesha County Technical College to discuss one of the most important questions facing our young people, how to get education and training that they need to find a rewarding and high-paying job. We have a lot of companies moving into the United States, and we're negotiating with a lot of companies. Just backstage, we were negotiating with a major, major, incredible manufacturer of phones and computers and televisions. And I think they're going to give the governor a very happy surprise very soon. During my campaign for president, I talked about crucial importance of vocational training, teaching young people the skills, crafts, and trades that are vital to our economy and our success as a country and their success as an individual. America must not only teach but celebrate the skilled laborers that produce and maintain the world's greatest machines, buildings, products, and infrastructure, innovations that improve our quality of life, help keep us safe, and have the power to inspire awe and wonder. And I will say, when I was going to school and I was going to college, but I'd meet people that didn't have a great ability, or frankly, they didn't have a great liking for what they were doing, what they were studying. But they could take apart an engine. They could do drilling like I've never seen before. They could put up a brick wall better than all of the kids in that college or that university, a great school. They could put up a wall in record time and make it far better than anybody else could have done. They just had an amazing ability, and that's what we're about today. We're here to talk about the dignity of work and the greatness of the American worker, and also loving the work you do. I just toured the classrooms, and I must say, they aren't your normal lecture halls, but in a certain way, they're far more beautiful. You learn incredible skills like welding, automotive repair, and machine tool operations. And I looked at the machines, and I'll tell you, what they have is incredible. And the knowledge to operate them is very, very, very amazing.
All right, so this is the president, playback of the president in Waukesha. If he makes any news there, obviously, it's a more of a policy.
Mm-hmm. Trying to get back to his agenda.
Agenda-related appearance there. He's talking about education and continuing education for people and specific trades education. That's part of his new agenda. We will, if he makes any news, we will bring that to you. That was recorded earlier this afternoon, now being played back by the pool reporters. So, again, we'll monitor that for you. And that will have to conclude the Top 5 at 5 in a very abrupt, bizarro
very abrupt.
Top 5 at 5.
It was sort of fitting for the day.
Yes. It was kind of like the president's cabinet meeting yesterday. It's a Top 5 at 5. It's kind of very much like that. So we'll do that. And Fox News' Greg Jarrett is going to join us on the other side to talk about Jeff Sessions. Greg is, of course, an attorney as well, lawyer mm-hmm. as well. And he will tell us how he thinks the attorney general did today.
The Top 5 at 5.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right.
What a day it's been.
Yeah.
President Waukesha right over the cheese border, and then you've got
Cheddar
the
Curtain.
Cheddar Curtain. That's what I was trying to find, the Cheddar Curtain. And then the Sessions testimony, 2.5 hours.
Greg Jarrett is with us from the Fox News Channel. And Greg, would you say, by the way, thank you and welcome to the show. Would you say that this was a good day for Jeff Sessions and the Trump administration?
Oh, absolutely. You know, now the question is, where does Sessions go to get his good name back? You know, for months he has endured a real public thrashing, and it turns out today it's been over nothing. He broke no laws. He breached no ethical duties. He colluded with nobody. And yet, you know, when you look back on the last several months, he has been maligned and vilified. People sought to impugn his honesty, his integrity, you know, and he vigorously defended himself today at the public hearing, refuting the accusations that he lied during his confirmation hearing before Congress. And I would say, you know, on balance, Ro and Anna, he acquitted himself nicely.
I would agree. He acquitted himself nicely. I mean, this is all assuming that nothing else comes out, right? Mm-hmm. That there isn't videotape of him, you know, meeting or the Russians come out and say, mm-hmm. Oh, no, he had a private room. He met with Kislyak and did all that.
And
back
what was discussed.
April yeah. of 16. But I kind of have a doubt that that's going to happen, because I figure if they had that kind of information at the Senate hearing, someone would have brought that up.
Oh, yeah. It'd be out by now.
Yeah.
Or if Sessions knew about it, knew he was there, he would have been a little more, he would have characterized his meetings a little differently.
I don't know that.
But, you know, the main claim against him all along is that he lied to Congress when he was asked during his confirmation hearing about Russian contacts. But you have to look at the context of the question that was posed back then by Senator Al Franken, in which he asked whether, you know, Trump surrogates had exchanged information with the Russian government. And if you look at Sessions' answer, and, you know, he angrily today recited verbatim his answer back then, in which he said, you know, essentially as a surrogate, he said, quote, "I have been called a surrogate in the campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians." Now, I mean, that really puts to rest the issue, but it should have been if anybody paid attention to the transcript back then.
But he did, though. I mean, that was the only issue, though. I mean, he did. He had Kislyak in his office, his Senate office, right?
Yeah, you know, he's a member of the Armed Services Committee. And by the way, that meeting was set up apparently by the Obama administration, and it's not unusual. I mean, a great many Democrats also met with Kislyak. There's nothing nefarious about it. I mean, that's what Kislyak does for a living in Washington the last decade. He's
right.
supposed to meet with American officials.
Let me ask you this, because you know you're a trained lawyer. You think about these things in it from all angles in a prosecutorial way. There was a very strange moment today, and that's when John McCain asked the question and followed it up with quoting press reports, which he seemed to be giving some weight to because he's a senator with, you know, on all of the Intelligence Committee and other places, that some Russian diplomats got loose, got into the wind, as they like to say on Homeland, and got away from their minders and the people who are watching them in the United States, and then got picked up somewhere in Kansas. In what the president, John McCain said the reporting was, that they were mapping the telecommunications grid. And it seemed to me that he brought that up. And tell me, Greg, if you think this is right or wrong. But it seems to me that John McCain brought that up because what he was really trying to do was say, hey, listen, Russia is an existential threat. And you folks in the Trump administration and the Trump campaign initially may not have been colluding with the Russians. But why so nice to the Russians? We have problems here.
Well, that may be a false assumption. I'm not so necessarily certain that they have been nice to the Russians. The Russians wanted sanctions to be lifted, and we haven't done it. And we have certainly had our disagreements with them over, aerial bombing in Syria of ISIS. And, you know, they were quite unhappy that, you know, we bombed Bashar al-Assad's air base, although we did give them a moment's notice in advance so they could get their, you know, Russian operatives out of there.
And you do have the president in the Oval Office saying to the Russians when he met with them the day after firing Comey, "I fired Comey and he was a nut job," and all of that. Mm-hmm. And they're not denying that happened. So it does seem that he's playing nice.
Listen, Russian officials meet with administration officials all the time, and they meet with past presidents as well. So that doesn't mean that we're necessarily all that friendly, and we do have adversarial interests. There's no question about that. I'm not sure that's changed.
Craig, I want to ask you about the Sessions testimony today, because I think many are saying that he did well defending his honor in the beginning, but that it didn't go well for him when he was evasive, and it was pointed out by several senators that he didn't really have a legal basis for evading questions. Senator Harris of California had some of the most pointed questions and back and forths with the Attorney General Sessions, and said, you know, hey, point to the policy in writing that allows you to not answer our questions today. And he really couldn't there. Was that fair?
Well, he could have. It is there in the Department of Justice regulations. And it derives from the well-established privilege endorsed by the Supreme Court involving executive privilege. And Sessions was right, as he tried to patiently explain, that it's the president that has the right to invoke executive privilege. And Sessions cannot do it. All he can do, and this is the proper procedure, and Ron Wyden, the senator, knows this, although he seemed to be outraged, that this procedure is that the witness declines to answer a question about a presidential conversation. The committee, if they really want it, they take steps to compel it. At that point, the president can or cannot invoke executive privilege. Then it goes to the courts if it's contested still. And that's the procedure followed ever since the Supreme Court recognized the privilege in the 1970s. And Sessions, I agree, could have done a better job of explaining it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I know we're short on time here, but let me just say this. Wouldn't it behoove the president to be more explicit about Russia as an existential threat?
You know, I at the outset of every administration, they try to play nice.
Yes. And does it work, Greg Jarrett from the Fox News Channel? Does it, in fact, work?
You know, the old reset button in Hillary Clinton.
Right. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. All right, Greg. Thank you very much.
Broken reset button. All right, guys. Good
thanks, Greg.
Like
thanks, that. Man. Violetta Potomatic's got the WGN Turbo Treble Spots. All right. Now, as I was just saying, you know, you never know. The world is so goofy right now. I don't know. It's hard to find a hero. Hard to find people you can believe in. Well, we found one. We got a guy. Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of this program. We always have a guy.
And
we can always find
honor
something.
To be in the studio with him.
Ryan Shannon is a United States Navy veteran, and he is going to be participating in the 2016 DoD Warrior Games, which are going to be held here in Chicago, which is very cool because you're from Morris originally, right?
So yes.
Just a little downstate from us. Mm-hmm. Not so far downstate that we don't understand your accent,
no.
But just fine. Just you know, close enough to Chicago that it counts.
Don't need an interpreter.
That's exactly right. And let's first of all, now the Warrior Games is an amazing thing that has been put together to help veterans to raise awareness about veterans who have been injured in war and, you know, need continuing care. But then they take the warrior spirit. You can't get away from this. And I know there's other organizations that do this that require, because you guys, your training and your dedication and motivation to be what you were in the military continues on even after you've been injured. And you got to sort of, you know, get that energy out somehow, right?
Absolutely.
And so what is just amazing is you watch this, the amount of intestinal fortitude, things I don't have,
no.
things I just, you know.
No question. I mean, you guys by nature are competitive, you're strong, you're like, you know, you're into the, getting into this kind of thing. But does everyone who participates in the Warrior Games, do you all have played this sport in the past and have expertise, or do you develop it?
No, for me, I was a big track and cross country guy. And I always say, like, you're never going to see our doctors at Warrior Games because we're not supposed to be doing these things. But I was a big track runner, cross country runner in high school and college.
Awesome.
And I played around with, like, volleyball and things like that, but I never swam competitively or anything like that. But then when I got hurt, I started getting introduced to these other adaptive sports, sit down and play volleyball, get in the pool, and I can't really use my legs too well. So swimming all upper body and everything, and just completing a lap or serving the ball and things like that, and starting to realize that, hey, it's not over. I can still keep doing these things. It really starts clearing your head a little bit, takes you out of the darkness of, yeah, okay, everything's broken and I'm a completely different person now.
Mm-hmm.
So you sustained an injury while you were serving on the USS Pasadena, and then this is interesting. Do I have this right that you actually broke your foot while you were on leave? Right?
I was on short, so I had like a 3-year period of bad luck. That's what I'm chalking that up to. I was stationed in New Hampshire for a little bit, and there was a fire on a submarine, and I went and fought that fire for 10 and a half hours, and I have some PTSD and anxiety just from the things I saw and what happened. And then about a year later, I was underway during a fire drill on the Pasadena, and I was putting my shoes on or my socks on, and another sailor came out of his rack, and I took both of his feet to the back of the head, knocked my head in between my legs, and traumatic brain injury sustained from that.
Oh my gosh.
And then another year later, I got stationed in Hawaii on shore duty, so off the submarine, so I could kind of recover from the brain injury and everything. And I broke my foot at the beach with my division and my family, and everybody was there. And misdiagnosed for 3 months.
They didn't know it was broken.
No, it was too swollen, and it wasn't really registering on the X-ray. And for 3 months, I ran on it. I was told it was a sprained ankle, and I've had those before. So
this is the thing. We were talking about this yesterday because there was CNN did this story about there's a program. I mean, there's so many really very noble and great programs out there that are taking care of wounded veterans right now. Private sector and programs, and one of which is a guy who takes them out rock climbing so that you rappel off the side of a rock, put yourself back in sort of that harm's way concept, mm-hmm, so that you can start the emotional healing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points the guy was making was also an amputee, and he was like, it's how well you suffer. And I thought to myself, oh, my God.
You wouldn't pass that test.
I'm the worst sufferer of all time.
I know. If I have a torn toenail, I'm at the doctor. And I'm like, wait a minute. I cannot play through this. No way.
So
broken foot.
You have a broken foot. You're running on that. The fighting of the fire. And again, we think about a lot of the things, and I think this is an important point here, that we think about those who were in Afghanistan and Iraq, mm-hmm, and the injuries sustained there, and obviously we should. But around the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, there are tens of thousands of U.S. military personnel who are on active duty in harm's way, doing things that we are not covering in the news. We can't cover the news. Some things we don't know about, and other things are less cavalier, if you will.
Absolutely.
than what goes on in those places.
Mm.
And so when people are coming back from their service, and this is the other thing too, as a submariner, I cannot imagine what that duty is like. Having been on a United States Navy, mm-hmm, submarine, old one and new one. New ones are a lot nicer than the old ones, right? If you ever go on the World War II.
But how long were you on one for?
For about 2 hours. And
a little different.
And it was tied up to a dock.
Oh,
it wasn't going anywhere. And they're amazing, amazing, uh-huh, amazing, amazing pieces of equipment. But my God, that's not easy,
not
duty,
easy,
man.
Dude.
Yeah, you mentioned not knowing what we do. I'm still convinced my wife doesn't know what my job was on that submarine. And I deployed for 8 months at one point, and she's like, oh, he reads emails, that's what he does. And I'm like, okay.
You couldn't think that, right?
I mean, for weeks at a time, Well, perhaps months at a time. We don't really know for sure, and I don't think we're supposed to know. Nope. I mean, you have no idea if it's day or night, or if, you know, you're living on a totally, you're living on a clock without any. There's no daylight signature there, right? No. And that's part of the issue.
They dim the lights to kind of signify that, hey, it's dark time. But we hook up a TV from the periscope, so when the scope goes up, I kind of have like my own little window where I can look out. But it's just water moving.
And right, and the periscope's not always up.
No, it's not.
Right, so I mean, really have that notion. And what it is an incredible, incredible service, and it's a great fraternity, right?
Absolutely.
For those who have served in the Silent Service.
That's one of the big things when you get hurt and you get your career starts ending and stuff. I miss that bro. I just want to go to sea. That's what I want to do, and I can't do that anymore. So you kind of lose those things, and the adaptive sports and the Navy and everything, they do a good job at bringing you back into the fold and giving you that camaraderie again.
Now you have a special guest with you here, little four-legged friend, Chelsea?
Yes. She's named after Chelsea Dagger.
She's just wagging her tail.
Look at that. Oh, I see what you did right there.
She's a therapy dog.
And that's from One Pet, One Vet. And, of course, we've had those folks on a number of times.
It's a huge organization.
Great organization.
She was part of the first graduating class. So.
Wow. How long have you had her?
I've had her since she was 6 weeks, so a little over 3 years now. And she just finished 2 weeks ago her 18 months of training. And
she's a PTSD dog, right?
She's a service dog as well. Helps me with mobility, like up and down stairs as well. But anxiety, PTSD, she works with all those.
I gotta say that MC, which is one of the first dogs out of that program, mm-hmm. was in here, and
darling,
and came and sat at my feet, dog. And I thought this dog knows something
left
I don't
veteran
know. Right,
who she
right.
was working with, and said, "Nope, I got someone else I gotta care for
right,
over
this
here,"
is,
and sat right at the base of your foot.
Right, more urgent problem over here. If anybody could speak dog, I'm just letting you know now we have a problem.
Planted herself there and wouldn't move.
On my feet, which mm-hmm. I thought was a pretty amazing moment.
Told us everything we needed to know.
All right, so you're gonna be. Let me see if I got this right, Ryan. You're gonna be. Taking part, how many events are you going to be taking part in?
I'm in seated volleyball, track, and swimming.
Wow. And this all starts, this is very cool, because this is a program people went to. Did you go to Invictus? Were you there?
I'm on Invictus team this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Invictus is the hairy one, the Prince Harry one?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. just asking. I'm just asking.
Some people know it.
Okay.
Right, oh, that's the one the Prince Harry's
just asking.
About. Oh, can I go? Were you at Invictus last year when it was here in Florida?
No, I watched it. A lot of my teammates were on there. And so I got to watch it when it was on ESPN or stream it and root them on from home.
Everybody I know who went down there just wanted to, especially reporters, all they just want to talk about Prince Harry.
Exactly.
I go, there are real heroes here. Where's Invictus?
Where's Meghan Markle?
This year.
It's in Toronto, Canada.
Oh, great.
Yep.
So it's even better. All right. So
these games are spread out at different places across the city. We got the McCormick Place, you got the Lakeside Center, Lane Tech Academy. Oh, my alma mater. You got the track competition over there, and then University of Illinois for swimming. So you can see people throughout across the city.
Absolutely.
Different
all those
games.
All those events are free and open to the public. And like I said, we're doing our thing and out there competing and everything. But I know I've been talked to many times from just people who came and watched, and it changed their thinking of everyday life and how they get through problems or traffic even. I mean, traffic.
Sure.
Yeah.
Chicago traffic won't be as bad.
When you think your life is crappy, you go to these kind of events, or you go to any kind of an event that is honoring those who've served and mm-hmm. been wounded, and you're like, I am such a
complainer.
Yes, I was going to use another word, but but that's what it is. And this is, by the way, the Warrior Games are going to be in Chicago starting June 30th. Opening ceremonies then, and then through July 8th. So it's that 4th of July week, essentially, is what it's going to be. And as Anna just said, it's all over the place,
which
it's
is great.
All kinds of
catch
places.
Catch up with it at McCormick Place or Museum Campus, United Center.
So you're going to see a lot of wounded veterans around Chicago, right? And so thank them for their services. I am thanking you now, Ryan,
for
everything that that you have done. And I would like to thank Chelsea for everything that Chelsea has done for you and for me at this moment, because Chelsea came up and ran across. This is how I know I'm nuts, because when I met the dog a few minutes ago, the dog's like comes up to me, rubbing up against me. Like, it's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay.
She's a very calming influence. We'd love to borrow a Chelsea, or else maybe one of Chelsea's relatives at some point once they finish the training program. Could you put them on loan here for WGA
Radio? I think people who deserve it more than I do, but
even just for a day would help.
Yeah, maybe. That'd
just
be okay.
A day. She's darling.
All right, so just Google 2017 Warrior Games, and that's the way to find tickets and find all the things that you are going to need for that. And again, Ryan, appreciate you being here. It's an honor to meet you, sir.
Yeah. And thank you for your service. We'll be out there cheering you on.
Thank you, guys.
And good luck and kick a little butt. And kick a little butt on behalf of the United States of America, the Invictus Games, which is sort of like the Olympics, the International Olympics version of that. Features Prince Harry. That's the most important part.
And very importantly, our veterans from around
exactly.
the world.
Exactly. All right. DOD Warrior Games, they are coming to Chicago. Do not miss it. And Ryan, thank you so much for being here. Violetta Potomatic's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
Who let the dogs out?
You know, it's been a very strange couple of months, I think, for me.
For you personally?
Yes, for me personally, as I've been trying to, figure out what it is. What has happened to my America? I don't get it. I don't understand what's happening.
It's stressful when you wake up every morning, like, bracing for what news there's going to be or what's going to happen in the world.
You have to. I mean, I think everybody has got to be a little bit thrown by everything that we're seeing here. And whether or not, whether you believe 110% in the president of the United States, still thrown by what's happening, right? It's a little, there's a lot going on. And then all of a sudden a therapy dog walks into the studio and
beautiful.
I'm like crawled up on the floor with it like, okay, can you help me? I have an entire team of lawyers and doctors and everybody else trying to therapize me every day.
Turns out all you needed was one therapy dog.
And it's like one dog shows up and I'm like, I'm good.
She
I'm fine.
Right up to you. Right up to you, wagging her little tails. We're like, okay, it's cool now.
Yeah,
it's all fine.
I'm here for you.
I know. I felt that. That vibe was very much alive in the room, and there was calm for one brief, fleeting moment.
That's the second therapy dog to do that to me. See, that's the thing that worries me.
There's a pattern here.
Yes, and I would like to know.
We might know what it means.
Well, I want to know what the dog knows. That's the thing. I won't be happy until I know
that stuff. That whole anxiety thing. They know.
Yeah.
I know.
What did the dog know and when did it know it?
See, don't answer a question like that because that's going to get me all tense again, Cap.
Dog doesn't recall.
Or the dog is asserting the fifth. Or executive privilege. The dog actually has executive privilege.
He wants to reserve the right for you to do that later, Ro.
Exactly. That's right. Thank you very much, Jeff Sessions.
Sure. Wouldn't want to preempt your ability to be able to executive privilege ties it later.
Right. I poop on your executive privilege. All right.
Is the dog from South Korea?
No, the dog is from that is a
thankfully no.
That's a very bad triumph. The insult comic dog.
Oh, that's where you're going with.
All right, we do. We love it. Thank you, Chelsea, for being here,
Thanks, Chelsea.
And thank you, American Hero, for being here as well.
That sounds wrong.
All right, let us hear what Judy Pilak has on the WGN News coming your way in 2 minutes. It's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. Trying to get over I wanted my therapy dog back.
I need the therapy dog back, but I think Chelsea's very happy with the veteran who visited us earlier.
Right. And a military therapy dog in, and it's like, this just tells you what a complete
mess we are.
Jag I am, is that I'm like, hey, how much for your therapy dog?
He's like, well, this one really isn't adoptable. It kind of has a already. You're like, but I really need it.
I'm like Martin Scully. It's basically what I'm like. I'm going to charge you $18,000 for the drug that will save your life per day and then buy a therapy dog from a vet who really needs it. What happened to me? Yeah. All right. Anyway, it was such a great honor to meet.
It really was.
That, and we should mention that again, the Warrior Games that are going to be in Chicago here. A very, very special special event, 4th of July week. And we were honored to meet Ryan Shannon, who is a Navy veteran who's got a number of different injuries from his service and an amazing therapy dog, Chelsea. So
great time to go out and check out the Warrior Games when you just get to see them compete, cheer on our veterans, and then also thank them for their service. It's fun times.
So speaking of Martin Scorelli, I'm making the transition here. The Bitcoin, right? Didn't he want to buy...
He had some.
When he bought the album, when he
Oh, right.
Wu-Tang Clan, like one run, like their one record that they cut, and he bought it. He was going to buy it in Bitcoin.
Yeah, he was like bragging about how many millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin he had.
And Bitcoin, I never quite fully understood it. I didn't understand, like, what is it? And I didn't trust it. Well, it turns out that Bitcoin,
had you invested back then,
has gone up remarkably.
It's at a record of $3,000 a Bitcoin this week or last week.
Per coin. Now, what? Now, but how do you redeem that? How does that work?
It just all seems kind of shady to me, to be honest.
All right. Well, thank God we've got somebody who can explain it to us. Craig Bonos is with us. And he is a CEO and Wealth Management Group of Wealth Management Group. Hello. I got that right. I think I've got that right, Craig.
I think you're close enough. Good evening, gang. I mean, I want to borrow your therapy dog because the move in this coin price has been crazy inside the last month.
Do you own a lot of it?
And by the way, you're an Illinois State graduate. Is that correct?
Oh, fear.
I am from Bloomington Normal. ISU. Go Redbirds, baby.
There
you
go. Kevin Powell. Anytime we're like such a Redbird intensive program.
Right. We somehow
It's our producers from there, all of our people. So welcome to the family, Craig. All right. Now,
thank you.
We'll explain explain what a cryptocurrency is.
All right. Cryptocurrency in my layman's language, you know, it's not paper. It's not a coin. It's a digital currency that we can use to go ahead and pay for goods, transfer funds, do all of this electronically. And the big deal is it doesn't have to go through a central register like a big bank. So it's something that transcends people, business, countries, and it lives in this digital format. And I think it's so incredibly new. I mean, this has really come on the scene in the last 7 years that everyone's waking up over these headlines, Bitcoin 3000, saying, gee, should I be getting in on this? Should I own some? Did I miss it?
Always buy at the high. That's always been my philosophy, Craig.
You know, I heard that about you. You buy high and sell low.
That's
right?
What I do.
It's reverse what most people do, but somehow it works. But it's anonymous, too, isn't it? Because you can't really easily track who owns it. Isn't that part of it? Which is where I said it was sort of shady, because people use it for shady transactions, don't they?
I'm happy you said that, because I am guilty back in 2010, 2011, talking about Bitcoin and saying it was the home of these shady deals, black market deals, weapons, drugs, all of these things. Because to a degree, you really are under a veil of,
anonymity.
Anonymous.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally
anonymity. Honest. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, I think realistically what we're seeing, and the reason there is such interest, is this entire cryptocurrency movement, we're getting through the infrastructure building phase, and I gotta think, you give it another year or two, you might see mainstream transactions start to go viral.
All right, now see, this is fascinating, because the impact of that is going to be ginormous on currency markets, if it really does, because it'll become an overriding currency. It's not governed theoretically by any government or any
a global currency, isn't it?
Right. And it's sort of, I gotta feel like, since I can't touch it and I can't feel it, and it's not backed by the good faith and credit of the United States of America or
gold.
Of the European Union, or that's gold, you know, like there's gold is gold, but that's Game of Thrones. They had the gold. Why would we trust it?
Well, and therein lies the whole hook. See, this isn't a U.S. thing, and I agree with you. I take great pride when I open up my wallet and I see money, when I log on to my bank account, and I know that money is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States of America. But if you're in an emerging market country, if you're sitting in Korea, you're sitting in Europe, maybe you're in Cyprus, wherever you might be, and you're seeing the value of your local currency change radically overnight, you're seeing hyperinflation, you're seeing governments transition quickly, you know what you start to say to yourself? I need to have a way to protect my wealth. I need to get diversified. And that's part of the springboard that really launched Bitcoin, is all of these overseas investors that make up more than 50% of the transactions wanting to diversify their own money away from the political turmoil that's at home.
Is it? But it, I guess I don't understand. Haven't there been wild swings for Bitcoin? Isn't that largely because it is unregulated and can't they print more Bitcoin or digital Bitcoin?
How do we know?
You know what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, how do you know when it ends?
So yeah,
I mean,
who's the guy? Who's the Bitcoin guy?
And they won't even tell you who that guy is. There's like an anonymous name or something, right?
You're right. I don't even know who the guy is or the guys and girls that started it. It's under that alias, you know, that we all see back from 2009.
Satoshi
and we all know
Nakamoto.
The story that there's exactly, you know, and we've heard that, hey, all the Bitcoins are going to be mined by, you know, 2040. There's going to be 21 billion of them all together, all this jazz. But I think the point is, the reason this is so headline worthy is you're seeing these movements all across the globe where you see various forms of instability, and away from what you said earlier, Anna, the people that wanted to enter into transactions under the veil of anonymity on the black market, you're now seeing this become mainstream where people want to protect their purchasing power. And what I'm seeing is because, you know, we're not investing in Bitcoins for wealth management group clients. It's not a publicly traded security.
Yeah.
But with publicity comes inquiries, and I'm almost likening this a little bit to gold. It's maybe an unfair comparison, but if you think about
it. Because it's a hedge against against other kinds of currencies getting wacky, and it's a hedge. So if the U.S. dollar goes down, the Bitcoin's going to go up in theory. But again, we go back to this whole notion of the dude or the dudes. I have this theory.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. And Craig, just tell me if I'm crazy.
Okay.
I feel like there's a guy in a volcano cave, like in a off of an island in Japan, who is got, you know, he's got nuclear weapons and he's got helicopters and forces. A Bond villain is running this whole thing, who's intent upon world domination. Because I until we know who it is, I don't understand why people would feel comfortable
and put real money in.
Yeah, real money. And I mean, I'm not going to ask you your exposure, Craig,
no.
But I mean, you're putting real. I mean, you deal with real stuff. I mean, real dollars and real people. And I
deal with real money and real people. And now the big judgment. Are you crazy?
Yeah, that is. I
don't think the guy is sitting in a volcano, because I don't know if he has electricity to mine his Bitcoins. But I wouldn't be surprised that this is just one more step in this crazy, disruptive culture we're in, that the millennials came through and have shaken it all up.
Oh, don't blame them. Don't blame
big
them.
Bank.
We blame them for everything.
Oh, come on. I said that.
Everything's
our fault.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Everything's the millennials' fault. Yeah, I have an explanation for that coming up, actually, why everything's the millennials' fault. All right. Well, Craig,
you could lead in.
We thank you very much for explaining.
Thanks,
we appreciate your time, sir.
That's
all right.
Really helped.
No, great to be on.
Thank you.
Fear the birds.
Yep, there he goes. I'm a state graduate.
Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak revealed he bought Bitcoin back when it was $700. So now he looks even smarter than he did look.
Go trade it in with somebody and see what happens to it. All right. Violetta Pottermatic standing by with the WGN traffic trouble spots. All right. I've had it. I got to go home.
Not ready to get the Bitcoins yet.
I am not. I'm not going to invest in Bitcoins. And maybe I'll miss out, but I'll be happy in my ignorance. Hey, speaking of happy, Violetta Pottermatic has got a video that she has just posted on the WGNradio.com site.
Mm-hmm.
You went to NeoCon today, is that correct?
I did, and it was really interesting.
That's the big, NeoCon is the... one of the bigger trade shows that comes to Chicago, and it's
design, innovation, commercial,
so cool.
Industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I talked to a lot of people about how millennials are entering the workforce and how they're changing the design concepts over there.
Because people don't want, there's a bunch of stories about this. Millennials don't want to work in offices. that are like little, cute little, even cubicles. They like big, long, like those desks, like those tables you go to in a restaurant.
It's
and
very
they make everybody
communal.
Sit next to each other.
Yeah,
and you're like, I don't want to sit next
on
to them.
On a bench, and then you're suddenly involved in everybody else's conversation.
I don't
it's
want
about
that.
Engagement.
I don't want to be engaged.
Student-led learning.
I don't want to learn.
Technology.
I don't want to be technological.
No, why would you want to do
and
that?
And then, and they have, and the other big thing is that millennials are responsible for the stand-up desk.
Yes, and there's a lot of standing assist chairs actually at the show. So you'll see that in the video and kind of how this is all playing into millennials entering the workforce.
Do you see that you can actually sit at a desk that has pedals underneath it and you can like you
oh,
can
work
actually
out?
Work out while
you're
working?
Working.
Yeah.
I
actually
that.
Stood on this. It's called a Wurf board and it's surfing at work. So when you're standing at this work desk,
dude,
you'll be working out.
Let's go working,
and,
man.
Exactly.
You know what I like to do? I like to like go swimming dude. While I'm working. I like I'm at a swimming desk, dude.
Sick
that's
maneuver.
What I want.
Gnarly.
And I ran into a left-handed chair, which is exciting for all the left-handed people out there.
Are you left-handed?
Yes, I am.
And what is the difference?
It's called a ruckus chair. So causing ruckus, you can sit with it left. It's got the elbow on the left or the right, and then you can sit
don't
on
most chairs have elbows on both?
Well, no, but this is a non-contemporary chair. You can sit on it any way you want.
A non-contemporary chair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And very then there's a jabber box, which is a communication
telephone. Oh, we're getting a jabber box, dude.
What is that?
What is a jabber
sick,
box?
Sick, though.
It's a personal space, completely soundproof, and then you communicate through teleconferencing with other people.
Oh, like, does it go over your head, like a box that goes over your head?
It's like a telephone booth that you step into.
Well, I've heard of those. They've had, like, pods where you can kind of
pods,
go to sleep
exactly.
and nap. And
well, this is for work, but, yeah, I guess you
and do you have stand in it, or can you sit in it?
No, you can sit in it.
You can sit. Can you lie down in it?
No.
And sleep, and nobody knows?
No.
You could probably fall asleep anyway. And you go into the box and it's like totally soundproof.
Mm-hmm.
Soundproof.
It's like a skiff or whatever that is.
Kind of shut out the world.
They say they're solving for privacy in a dense environment.
Oh, you know what guys are going to go do in that. That's
okay.
The problem.
<It's> not-
Oh, I got to go in. I'm going in for a meeting right now. Yeah. It's like all porn.
Be back in like 6 minutes.
Yeah. Come on now.
Why does the show make everything dirty?
It's not dirty. It's just reality.
So those are some of the exciting things you can see at the NeoCon show and
great.
Online at WGNRadio.com.
Porno viewing centers for your office place.
Not exactly what the Jabberbox
that's
meant
not
for.
How they promoted it, but that's what we've determined it's going
to
be used.
So wait, can you breathe in the Jabberbox? I'd like to know the answer to that, too. Did you go in a Jabberbox?
I did, yeah. You can see that in the video. It's kind of fun because you can turn the screen around, so then it just becomes like a selfie. So
that's good for you.
Yeah.
What? But how are you breathing in there?
Normally through your nose.
But is it? Does it get hot in the Jabberbox?
No,
it
seemed
climate controlled.
Yeah, climate controlled. I really didn't ask.
This
about
is how
the Tutankhamen
circulation. Lost it, by the way. I just want to point that out.
We could grow our weed in there, bro.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be perfect. Get the heat lamp,
dude.
You could actually change the lights in there. Mine was purple.
Oh, go cat.
That's really cool, man. Hey, where is your Dark Side of the Moon album?
It's going to be gnarly.
All right, thank you.
So the idea is that you're going to be a more productive worker or you're just going to be more comfortable?
I've lost interest in all of this right now, but go to WGNRadio.com. It's time now for Justin Coffin, 720 WGN Chicago.
Download.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Ready for a big night tonight? Yeah. I get this. I got a sing in my step.
I got, I'm going to go out, hit the town.
Are you?
No. But I'm going to go out. I'm going to go outside. I don't know if it's going to rain. I'm thinking about sitting outside.
It is. I mean, it has been raining in the area. It just hasn't hit downtown Chicago yet.
I'm going to look at my radar.
Find a covered area, maybe.
Yeah. I'm in a big fight with my iPhone right now with the weather. I feel like they've been off a lot.
Not telling it to you right.
Yeah, I just
you gotta get the weather apps.
Yeah, that might be it. I just do it straight off the phone. But I feel like that's just straight data.
You know,
I used to blame like bad weather on
a big area,
on meteorology being wrong, but this is like just get it right. So I just feel like there's been nonstop it's going to rain, and it never does. And at least today it's starting to rain, so that's good.
See, here's the thing with Tom Skilling will tell us, who returns to the program tomorrow.
Nice.
It tells us that those just icon forecasts, where you just look at a sun or a cloud or whatever,
it's not enough.
Doesn't do you any good. And he's got one of the best. Why? You go to Weather WGN Weather Center, which mm-hmm. is an awesome site.
So
they have an
great
app too, and you can hit Tom with a lightning bolt. But also, I happen to like the Weather Channel's app, and then you get to watch a video of a bear swimming in a pool somewhere.
Oh yeah, they show you the weather videos.
Yeah.
I like those.
I'll show you something like really goofy.
Kind of stay on it longer than you thought you would, because you think you just go for just the weather, right. And then you're like, whoa, did you see this?
Yeah. So it's like,
all right.
Yeah, it's a sort of a great thing. So I'm like, oh hell, I'm looking right. What are you rushing me for? What's going on?
I'm not.
You got better things to talk about than the weather?
No, No, we're not even talking about the weather. We're waiting for Ro to scroll his phone.
Just wait a second. Just stop rushing me.
This isn't even talking about the weather. It's waiting for weather apps to load.
You know what? That's what I'm doing. So here's what. Well, it's our Wi-Fi. I think I'd probably sit outside. Okay.
Are you sure?
I gotta ask.
Check it again.
I have a solution. We have to find a solution to this because a question was raised
mm-hmm. okay.
a couple days ago
Uh-oh.
To me and Anna.
Yep.
About you.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. And it was another talk show host here.
Okay.
Who actually was on the
issue?
Air,
had
so it
issue?
Works out. So I guess I can say.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he has got executive privilege
secret.
At this point okay. anymore. But John Williams,
uh-huh.
you know,
King
who,
John, sure.
when we transitioned with him at the
yeah,
beginning of
right,
the show,
right.
He is sort of like, all right, what do you got on the show? And then if we go more than 30 seconds, all right, thank you very much.
Oh,
goodbye.
He wraps it?
Yeah.
He's
like,
old
thank
school.
You. And he's like,
he's very good at being
he's
on
old
time.
School.
Because, and he goes, well, you and Justin go on forever.
Yeah, we've got our own mini show.
And
sure.
it's like, and he said this. He actually said this, and I didn't think about this before as a fellow talk show host. He goes, I wonder how Justin feels about that.
Oh, I love it.
But you're taking all of his time.
No.
That's what he
I've
meant.
Adjusted. It's funny because I early on when we were doing the show and we would talk. It was. I mean, it's exciting to talk to you guys. I mean, you guys have been in the business. I'm fans of your work.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, I was like, we had segments in the first part of our 7 o'clock show, and they kept getting bounced back. And we kept, like, breaking into Rob's news.
Yeah.
And so then we just adjusted. Now we don't do segments in the first 20 minutes.
Did you blame me and Ro initially?
No.
Hey,
we,
sorry, those people
we just
don't
adjusted.
Talk.
I like it. I like, you know,
all
I'm
right.
I'm an improv guy by heart, uh-huh. and I like the idea of just kind of taking a chill, just being chill.
Rob, how do you feel about it? Do you feel like we're cutting into your business?
Here, hang on just a sec.
You look up your weather app.
He's probably always doing that, and he's reporting it to the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how long they went today?
Do you know what time they got to me?
Can you believe it?
Mr. Manley, do you know what time they got to me last night?
When it gets past maybe 5 after the hour, I will. You can. There, I have a tell. When I go to Rob, I just say, here's the news with Rob. I don't say what time it is. You know, if you do it before
he
the
knows.
5, it's like 7:02. Here's Rob Martyr.
I'm good up until about 07. Then I start getting upset.
Yeah, we start to get a little sweaty at that point. It gets real sweaty up in here.
All right, so we have a clear answer here that we have now. We're not stealing from you in any way.
No, you're making it better.
Okay.
So now we know how you feel.
Sort of.
That's good.
I mean,
every 2 weeks, the check gets deposited. I'm good. You guys can talk as long as
well,
you like.
Because John made me feel like, I'm like, I didn't think about this, and it's like,
yeah.
Well, I just wonder how he feels.
No.
I'm like, wait, how does he feel?
Yeah, exactly. It was sort of like we were doing you wrong.
No.
Right.
No,
so
John.
Now we feel better.
All right. So
I think you need to start digging more time out of, or, you know, like,
out of John.
John.
No, he's got to go.
He's got
He does. We should play a game to see how long we can keep John talking to us, you know?
Yeah.
Just filibuster.
I just hope that, you know, our little six-minute chats, our little crosstalk six-minute chats will get me invited to some of these parties sometimes that you guys have as a team where you go, you know, sensory deprivation or go
Well, it's always
track.
During your show. We're always out during your show.
If
That's
you ever get a weekend thing,
I'll
we'll
do a weekend. We'll invite you.
You could do John Williams' Price is Right.
Oh.
Those closest to
right.
the amount of time you keep John talking to you without
like
going
that.
Over wins like a Lou Malnati's.
I love
microwave.
That.
Right.
I
That's
love
a
that.
Great game.
Because John, but it seemed like now John did have another radio show he had to get to.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
He was up in Minneapolis
city.
Too. And
right.
so he was
you
he had to get
that
to
anxiety,
his.
Yeah.
his
but even
shows.
After that ended, still, he's a disciplined guy. He's on time.
He is disciplined. He's very.
He is.
You know, he's a the type of professional
mm-hmm.
that I one day hope to grow up to be.
Aspire to be.
But it has not yet happened.
That's high praise.
Yes, high praise.
High praise.
Coming from you.
All right.